started us off, and it was not just a busy segment. We had the breaking news, which particularly affects Brad because he covers the distaff. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You're on vacation, you know. You're not supposed to be doing videos and doing radio shows.
that was the beginning of the week. We're back in full force now.
very good. Well, did you partake of yesterday's pick six carryover?
I took a small shot at it. They were honestly tough races, and some of them actually played out fairly logically. A couple of ones that I missed, but those are always tough to string together.
No doubt. The 32, I mean, 32,055 was really, I mean, that's a great number for that pick six, because it you really feel like, you've achieved something if you negotiated it.
Yeah, I mean, it paid well. Obviously, the first winner of the sequence, that 13-1 Linda Rice upsetter, was a little tough to have. I mean, you could look back and argue that maybe that price was a little too generous on her. She did have some things to like, but still, I mean, you had to beat both favorites in there, and they didn't show up, allowing her to get the job done, and boy, did she win pretty easily. It didn't look like that on paper, but started the sequence off in a fashion that knocked a lot of people out right away.
Dave Grenning with me yesterday from San Diego, and when we just touched on the sequence, the first horse he mentioned was Malou. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, she's a horse who did come back on short rest in her prior race for Linda and looked like maybe she didn't respond well to that, and she had run okay against weaker company recently, but like I said, I mean, it was a race where the two favorites just really didn't show up at all, and a little tough to see that on paper, but sometimes those New York bred groups can have form that's a little bit unreliable.
I guess we could actually get a couple of ideas about the weekend, but the priority was your morning lines toward Breeders' Cup, and you've been focusing on the Friday races with the juveniles. Let me actually swing over there and away from the Saturday action, and let's start with the Glamour division get a feel for the juvenile.
I think it's a pretty strong Breeders' Cup juvenile. I mean, maybe these horses aren't running the kinds of buyers that jump off the page, not like the triple-digit figures that we've seen from winners of this race in the past, but it's a really competitive group, and I think a lot of these horses are lightly raced and have shown a lot of promise so far, and obviously that applies to the two likely favorites in here, East Avenue and Chancellor McPatrick, who couldn't be more different from a running style standpoint, East Avenue having that natural speed and Chance McPatrick just seeming to be the kind of horse that wants to drop back early and make that big run around the far turn, and it's worked for him so far in his 3-1 turn races. I guess we'll see if it works out going two turns. I did make East Avenue the slight favorite over Chance McPatrick. I just think that doubt maybe about how a deep closer is going to handle the Del Mar surface stretching out in distance could sway some people in East Avenue's direction, but they're both legitimate contenders.
The fun thing about this race, I mean, we've got these horses that have established that kind of authority, but you scratch beyond the surface, David, and you got a horse like Jonathan's Way that's been kind of out of sight, out of mind. You've got the three Bafferts, and you got to assume that one or two or all of them are eligible to improve the quote unquote running out of their own stalls. There's a little bit more here. I mean, Ferocious. I didn't think Ferocious acquitted himself poorly in that Breeders' Futurity at all. He should keep going forward.
Yeah, it's a race where I think the two favorites are legitimate. But like you said, I mean, there are other talented horses in this race. Jonathan's Way, I mean, so visually impressive on debut at Saratoga, overcoming that poor start and making that wide sweeping move to win the way he did. I mean, definitely stamped himself as a horse with talent. Obviously, he had a much easier trip last time in the Iroquois, but I think it's a positive sign that he was able to break more sharply and show that professionalism and progression from his first to second start. So he doesn't strike me as one that's some need-the-lead type, so I think he'll be able to work out a decent trip in this race, and we'll see if he is a horse that ultimately gets better with added distance. I think we're still waiting to see if that's going to be the case with some of the sons and daughters of Vekoma, but he's a horse that isn't totally exposed just yet. And, yeah, I don't know exactly what to make of the Baffert horses. I can't say that I love any of them on form, but I think you get into trouble just sort of summarily dismissing these Bob Baffert runners, especially in the Breeders' Cup out in Southern California. So I think you have to take all of them seriously. Gaming is maybe the most intriguing of those just because he's the least exposed, coming off the slight layoff and having not raced since the 7-furlong Del Mar Futurity, this being his first start going longer. But, I mean, look, he's by your Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. He's out of a dam who's by a Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. A lot of precocity in the pedigree. So, I mean, we'll see if he's able to go a little longer. And, yeah, you bring up Ferocious. I think it's maybe a little too soon to just write him off based on a couple of short-priced losses because, I mean, he was right there with Jensen McPatrick in the hopeful. And I know that there have been some excuses offered for his last couple of races. I think there was that the shoe issue in the hopeful for whatever you want to make of that. And then the Brutus Futurity last time. Yeah, I mean, he was really bounced around heading into the clubhouse turn. How much that detracted from his performance, maybe compared to the track just favoring speed a little bit, I think you could debate a little bit. But he's a horse that I'm not going to completely dismiss in this race because he showed that talent on debut, and he's always kind of given the impression he's a horse that should handle at a distance. So I'm not going to say that he can't get a mile and 16th just based on the fact that he wasn't able to reel in East Avenue last time.
Before we talk about the girls, let me give you a chance to riff on the two Japanese colts and what we're looking at here. You did everybody yeoman's work by laying out how to research and how to find some of the Japanese, some of the more elusive Japanese race replays, and copying and pasting the app, you know, the Japanese language characters will go a long way toward that, but you still better be internet Sam Spade to find these things. Talk about what we should know with the two Japanese runners.
Yeah, for those that didn't see, I put out a tweet about this a couple days ago. The JRA a couple years ago kindly made all of their replays available on their website. So if you go to, I believe it's japanracing.jp, and I put the tweet how to get to that portion of the site because it can be a little confusing with the way the site is designed. But when you get there, every single replay for every race on the JRA circuit is available on that website, and it's all in English. So that's a great resource if you're trying to look up replays while handicapping these Japanese horses. And you can also pretty easily find replays of the States races on the NAR circuit. The rest of those replays are a little tough, but I don't think it's going to come up too much with too many of these horses running in the Breeders' Cup. As for the two in the Juvenile, Akoro Azel seems like a long shot. I mean, he was easily beaten last time by a horse that we'll talk about just a little bit in the Juvenile Fillies. Shin Believe, I think, is the one that's a little bit more intriguing. Both of these horses go out for the same trainer. Pretty tough to be competitive in a race like this coming off just one prior start. But if you are able to look up the replay of Shin Believe's debut, he was pretty impressive. This $800,000 OBS purchase by Constitution, and he's got a lot of pedigree, especially if you dig into that female family. It's sort of some international pedigree. I think his dam was a multiple stakes winner in Mexico. This horse looks like one that wants every bit of ground. I mean, he debuted going a mile and an eighth, and he is this rangy son of Constitution with a big stride on him. I mean, if you ever watched Forever Young's debut, it's very reminiscent of that. I mean, how easily he won that race. Who knows where the ceiling is, but they're asking a lot of this horse to tackle a field like this at just his second start.
There you go. All right, let's press forward and talk about the girls. And it's funny, the last couple of seasons, very interesting. You know, for the longest time, David, we were always used to the fillies being faster and more precocious than colts. And for whatever reason, And it may have to do with, this is something I could ask Sid Fernando. I don't know if it has to do with patterns in breeding and some of the sires, but I, whatever reason, the fillies have not been as early and as impressive as historically they have been, and it's kind of weird.
It is a little weird. I guess if I take the cynical view of it, it's there's a lot more incentive to win these two-year-old grade ones with a male horse than there is with a female horse. And maybe connections who have talented fillies are a little more willing to bring them along slowly rather than try to rush horses into these races. Not saying that all the horses in the juvenile are rushed into that race. I mean, they obviously have shown the talent to get there, but there is real incentive in our game, the way that the business is currently structured, to win these grade ones with a male horse. I mean, it kind of automatically makes you a stallion prospect. It's not, I mean, the days where you have to be a champion to be considered a stallion prospect are long gone. You win one of these races and suddenly you're off to stud and maybe you have a 200 mare book your first season. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me, but I agree. It is a little bit stark, the difference in quality between these two races and the speed figures some of them have run. We'll see. I mean, some of these fillies could ultimately turn out to be pretty nice. You know, I think of that very slow Breeders' Cup juvenile fillies from a couple of years ago, and now Raging Sea, who came out of that race, looks like one of the major contenders in the distaff this year. So these horses can progress over time. And I think there is some upside with horses like Immersive and Scottish Lassie. They're still very lightly raced, non-compliant too. I think you could put her in that category. I mean, she's obviously just been beating up on her stablemates out west from the Bob Baffert barn, but she's run speed figures that are comparable to her East Coast counterparts. I'm a fan of Immersive. I just have liked what she's shown in her first few starts. She's not the flashiest sort, but she just gets the job done. It doesn't seem like at a distance has been a problem for her whatsoever, and you could make the argument that the Alcibiades might have been the strongest prep race that any of these are exiting, even though it came up a little bit slow like some others. So I think she's the horse to beat. But it's a pretty interesting affair, and I'll be very intrigued to see what we get from that Frisette winner, Scottish Lassie, who got the fastest speed figure of any of these, but it's obviously stepping up against a much tougher field.
Well, and then there feels like there's a little bit of a fall off from that point, and non-compliant was very good for Baffert, and I think we'd have to take a step forward. Amos, you know, we got a good look at Quick Kick over the summer, and I mean, she's nice. She'd have to improve. Cassie out there with La Cara, who won the Pocahontas, seems like there's fairly consistent agreement that the Pocahontas and Iroquois, for whatever reason, aren't as impactful, you know, coming back toward Breeders' Cup. Gargan's horse, Snow White, who was, you know, somebody who was going to have to be second to Scottish Lassie, but Snow White's a maiden who seems talented. All that said, let everybody know what Mr. Saito has in American Bikini.
Yeah, I mean, you could make some cases for the other American horses to have some upside. I think a lot of these horses still have upside. They're so lightly raced. But I think what you're getting at, that a lot of these favorites haven't necessarily wowed so far. It's sending a lot of handicappers looking in the direction of the Japanese horse, American Bikini, who obviously has nothing but American pedigree, being by American Pharaoh. Her dam, Paris Bikini, actually has produced a Coaching Club American Oaks winner in Paris Light. So she's only gone up to 7 furlongs so far, but American Bikini certainly bred to get more distance. And watching her replays in Japan, she seems like a horse that has a lot of early speed, but she did show some staying power last time to beat that group of males in a stakes event at Chukyo. And watching her run, I think she gives a lot of people some memories of her sire, American Pharaoh, because she looks a lot like him. I mean, she's got kind of that lean body and a similar way of moving. So she's an intriguing contender in this race. It's sort of hard to gauge the quality of these Japanese horses. And I think there would have been a time, maybe a decade ago, when you would have viewed a horse coming from Japan that had only raced on the dirt with quite a bit of skepticism, because I think the dirt program in Japan used to be a lot of horses that maybe weren't suited to the turf or were failures on the turf went over to the dirt, but it seems like the quality has really risen among the dirt competition in Japan, especially since they started investing more in these American pedigrees and buying more American broodmares that were dirt horses as opposed to turf horses. And I think American Bikini is a perfect example of that. So interested to see how she stacks up against this field.
Well, the turf pairing, the boys and girls races, these have become really among my favorite. Of all the wrinkles that have been added to the Breeders' Cup, the juvenile turf races have really, I think, been a fabulous addition. And it's also elevated the lead-up program around North America. If there's a success story that Breeders' Cup can talk about, you know, in terms of the expansion of the event, this is the division. Now, that said, there's always been, David, from the early, you know, from the early introduction, there's been this pattern where and Chad Brown has a lot to do with this, but the pattern that the fillies, you wanted North American-based, and the boys, you wanted Euro-based. And, you know, there's been exceptions, of course, in either direction, but kind of feels like we're looking at that again this year.
I don't know about that. I mean, we'll see if Aidan O'Brien brings over this Lake Victoria. I haven't seen reporting definitively one way or the other on exactly who's coming.
Now, this morning there was. This morning there seemed to be some pretty definitive. I picked up something on here. I'll tell you where it was. It was because it was part of what I did with the Howard Wolowitz news. Where did I put it? Here it is. Hold on. I actually found it at sportscasting.com. Aidan O'Brien, Breeders' Cup runners revealed as Ballydoyle plan takes shape. And when it comes to the fillies, Lake Victoria and Heaven's Gate, and for the boys, Henri Matisse. But bubbling bypassing from the fillies and monumental bypassing for the boys.
Okay. Well, I mean, if that's the case, and Lake Victoria is running in the juvenile fillies turf, she is a standout Euro like there does not exist in the male turf race. I mean, she is the kind of Euro that I think you rarely see come over for this race because she is one of the best two-year-olds in Europe. 4-for-4 in her career. She's won a pair of group ones, one of them over 7 furlongs. Actually, her first 3 victories came over 7 furlongs in England and Ireland before she showed the versatility to cut back last time in that 6-furlong Cheveley Park. But, I mean, she seems like the kind of horse that had sprinted over there that is going to have no trouble stretching out to the mile. She's certainly bred to go this far. And I find it intriguing that Aidan O'Brien is bringing a horse of this caliber over for this race. But if she runs and shows up the way that she has in Europe, everybody else could be in for a tough go of it here.
Well, that said, and I know you've got her as the 2-to-1 favorite listed. That said, Phil D'Amato's thought process, she's no doorknob.
No. Of the Americans, I think it's pretty clear that thought process could be the biggest rival to Lake Victoria. And, you know, it's a little odd, I mean, to see the best turf horse in the U.S. coming out of Southern California, because typically you just assume that the East Coast races are way deeper than the turf division in California. But, I mean, this filly has just dominated her competition since getting on the turf. She's gotten pretty good trips in her races, but she just seems like the kind of horse that has the versatility to make her own good trips. She's got good tactical speed, and we'll see how the post positions work out. I think that's always a really important factor in these races, going the mile with not a lot of run to the first turn, 14 horses. But if thought process gets a decent draw, you've got to imagine that she's going to be able to work out a good trip for herself relatively forward. And she's just run speed figures that are faster than what you typically see in horses coming into this race on the American side. So she's a good one. I would not take her chances lightly.
Anybody that you want to give a little bit of a look to as a price type or an inclusion type that you've been impressed with that might be under a little operating under the radar?
Yeah, I mean, it's a it's an interesting race in that it seems like you've got that standout Euro on that side, and then the standout American on this side of the ocean. And the others all seem like they're maybe a cut below, but I mean, two-year-olds can improve a lot in the fall of this year, and we'll see who's able to take that step forward and who's able to get the right trip in this race. On the Euro side, I mean, Heaven's Gate, I know, has attracted some support in overseas markets. To me, she looks like a cut below her stablemate, so she's had a lot more experience, so we'll see if there's really upside there. Watching her last race in the Weld Park, I thought maybe Fiery Lucy was the one that you'd want out of there because she got held up in traffic a little bit before coming on through late. The others that you would consider are probably American horses. I don't know if there's anybody that you really would want out of the Miss Grillo. I mean, Stiffian was a very fortunate winner of that race. Virgin Colada, I thought, got a decent trip for second, kind of still waiting for her to take a step forward. I know Destino Doro is a horse that got a lot of attention coming out of the Jessamine due to the trip that she got, but I didn't think her trip was that much worse than the winner of the race, Mayday Ready, who also got completely cut off at the start by Totally Justified, who's the one that fouled Destino Doro. And Mayday Ready is a horse that is probably going to be a bigger price than Destino Doro just due to the connections, even though she narrowly beat her last time. And she's shown the ability to make her own good trips. And I know Frankie Dettori has ridden her with a lot of confidence in her races, and she hasn't lost yet. So I wouldn't totally dismiss her for a horse that won an American prep that typically makes horses contenders in here. She could be somewhere in the 12, 15 to 1 range, if not higher.
I'll mention, just because of how much we respect his work, Rusty Arnold has got that Totally Justified. You've got a 20 to 1. Rusty, one of those conditioners that doesn't come to these events unless it's a horse that can compete.
Yeah, she's the one that caused those problems at the start of the Jessamine.
That's right.
But she still ran a game race, I mean, at the end. I mean, it was a blanket finish, and she beat Virgin Colada in the prior race at Saratoga. So she's got quality, too. I mean, it seems like beyond thought process, the Americans all look quite similar. So you want to do some price shopping.
Let's talk about the boys, and there is a clear favorite here in New Century. And in fact, my initial viewing of this group, David Aragona with us, I thought both New Century and Al Quadra, you know, coming out of the summer, I kind of see them, you know, kind of as a pairing going into this.
Yeah, I don't quite agree. I mean, I don't know if New Century is a clear favorite in this race. I struggled making a line for this race. I think it's way more competitive than the Phillies turf. Maybe that 93 buyer that New Century earned beating Al Quadra in the summer stakes makes him the favorite here. Based on his European form, these two are not the best Euros in the race. So I think it depends on how much stock you want to put in that flashy speed figure they got for the summer. And it's not just Bayer that has that race fast. It came up with a very fast final time. I do want to see some validation to the speed figures those two-year-old races got at Woodbine, particularly this summer stakes, because the Mark Cassie runner that was third in there, Dream On, the number that he got seems a little hard to believe based on his prior form. I mean, I know he's been improving with every race, but did he really jump up 16 points stretching out to the mile? Maybe he did, but it's not like that was a race where there were huge gaps between runners at the end, so it seems a little strange that it came up as fast as it did, but the time is the time. So I'm kind of taking the wait-and-see approach to see what prices these horses are and who ultimately winds up in this race and how the post positions are drawn, because it seems like the kind of race where there are a lot of options to consider. And kind of assessing the Euros, I mean, I've got the two Charlie Appleby runners. Al Quadra, a little bit unlucky in the summer. He kind of got squeezed between runners in the stretch when he was starting to get a run going. I don't know if he was going to beat New Century, but I think the margin could have been a little bit closer at the end. But, I mean, based on the Euro form, Appleby's other horse, El Mori City, is probably the better one. I mean, he won a Group 2 over there over the summer and wasn't completely disgraced trying the Group 1 National last time against some pretty nice runners, but I mean, you've got a few runners coming out of the National, including Andre Batiste, who has lost his last couple of starts for Aiden O'Brien over there, but caught a soft course last time in the Jean-Luc Lacordaire on the ARC undercard, and had run very well in prior starts over the summer. I mean, he won the first three races of his career. It was pretty impressive winning that Coolmar Stud Wooten Bassett Group 2 event at the Curragh back in August. So I know he maybe hasn't gone on since then, but he certainly attained a higher level in Europe than we saw either New Century or Alcudra achieve when they were racing over there. So we'll be interested to see kind of how the public approaches some of these runners. And even the other horse coming out of the National Stakes, Seagulls 11, returned in the Dewhurst next time out, which he finished fourth out of five, but was facing some of the very best two-year-olds in Europe that day. So he's shown real quality. Just going to be interested to see how these horses sort themselves out, because while maybe you don't have a standout like Lake Victoria is among the Euros in the Phillies turf, you've got maybe three, four, or five Europeans who all seem like they are of similar quality. It's going to be a pretty interesting handicapping affair. And that's not even mentioning some of the Americans who maybe look a cut below a few of these, not counting those that came out of the Summer Stakes as the North American contingent. The horses that raced in the Bourbon and the Pilgrim, I think they're going to have to step up a little bit. But seems like a pretty competitive affair.
One thing that's interesting is how extensively raced already the internationals are. Alcudra be making a seventh start, Emory City the fifth, Henri Matisse the sixth, New Century the sixth, and a horse we haven't really gotten to, Hugo Palmer, the Waco Kid. You've got a 20-1.
Yeah, he won a Group 3 last time at Newmarket. It seemed like it was pretty soft ground, and he just sort of got to the front end and was able to take that field from gate to wire. I wonder if the condition had a lot to do with the performance. He seems like a smaller, handy horse that just skipped over that soft going. His prior form doesn't necessarily point him out as a contender in this race, so kind of wondering if he was a little bit of a one-hit wonder.
Well, the Waco Kid, for those of you that aren't old enough to have seen Blazing Saddles, Gene Wilder, just spectacular. And finally, the Juvenile Turf Sprint. And we had the breakthrough from Big Evs last year. He'll try to win the Saturday version and become the first to do that. And, actually, one horse we did not talk about, you talked about the North Americans. Where do you shake out on Menti on the stretch out?
I mean, he is the full brother to Fierceness, who I think got more distance than maybe people thought he would early in his career. So, I mean, he's got that going for him. He does seem like maybe a smaller, more sprinty build than Fierceness was at this stage of his career. So, I wonder about the distance for him, but I think it's interesting that Pletcher seems pretty adamant that this is the direction they want to go with him. And speed is dangerous in these races, because if you're able to get out front, you avoid a lot of the traffic that many of these horses can be susceptible to in a 14-horse field. So I think it's interesting that he lands here. Obviously a way tougher race than the Futurity was.
All right, and then the rest of the contingent go in the 5/8, and this actually is, I haven't looked at this since Nicole Russo and I talked last week, and I haven't looked yet how you...
Yeah, so this is a tough line to make, obviously. Yeah. I mean, this is a field that seems like it's pretty chaotic in terms of comparing form one horse to another, because so few of them have even raced against each other, and they're coming in so many different directions, and many of the European contingent just are not really familiar with the kind of 5-furlong sprints that they're going to encounter at Del Mar. A lot of those straight course races that the sprinters running over there are just very different affairs. Big Evs was able to win this race last year. I think in general, you maybe favor the Americans slightly when these races are carved at the 5-furlongs. Big Evs was also a horse who was a pure 5-furlong specialist coming in here, whereas some of the Europeans that are in this race, have done their bet at running over six furlongs. I'm thinking of a horse like Whistle Jacket, if he is indeed coming for Aidan O'Brien. He's placed in three group ones in a row, actually winning the Prix Morny, but that was six furlongs over the straight course at LV. So you wonder if that's really going to translate on the turn back to five furlongs around a turn. So I think that's a big question for a lot of the European horses. Of the Americans, I guess Governor Sam is the one that maybe you want to trust the most because he's got that ample early speed, and maybe he went set some blazing fractions to win the Indian Summer. I know very few of those Keeneland turf sprints at this meet were coming apart, even after a leader set very quick fractions. But still, I mean, he was pretty game to hold on that day, and he's done nothing wrong in his recent turf starts, winning those four in a row. It's just going to be a much tougher spot for him. I think the most intriguing horse in this race is the one that I made the slight favorite on my early line. Going up a little bit of a limb, Ekoro Sieg. I think he's a horse that when people sit down to handicap this race and start to do some work, they will quickly realize that he is a major contender in here if they're not aware of him yet. I think I put out a tweet earlier this week saying that there is a Japanese horse that might be the most likely winner of any of the horses they're sending over that no one's heard of. this horse, if you've watched his replays in Japan, he is extremely fast. Just ran a field off its feet on debut. And then his second race in that stakes race at Nakayama broke a step slowly, then rushed up to quickly take the lead. He ran a sub-22 opening quarter with no run-up, which, if you think about that, translates to maybe a 20 and change opening quarter. And if you actually time his second quarter mile after that first eighth with the run-up, he did go 20 and change. This is a crazy fast horse. Got all American pedigree. Even though he's gone six furlongs twice, it looks like he's going to have no trouble handling the turn back to five furlongs if he breaks well. Hideyuki Mori, the trainer, has sent plenty of horses over to compete in the U.S. Not all of them have been favorites. Many of them have been actually a horse that look a little silly on paper. But this one seems like he is a major contender.
Well, and a horse that is, you know, totally, total American, American bred, American pedigree, up and down. Twirling Candy out of Bernstein Mare, Lily Pod, and there's a lot to like. Big Mojo as Appleby, not Charlie, but Michael Appleby tries to win this 2 years in a row. You can put a line through Ed Walker's Celandine, who is not coming. That came out yesterday as well. In terms of, let me see who else that...
I think one of the more intriguing Euros in the race might be Shareholder, if he's coming over for Carl Burke, a horse who was impressive winning the Norfolk, going five furlongs to Royal Ascot,
right.
And then
completely
fell apart in the Prix Morny, but has had some time off since then. Seems like maybe one of these horses that is going to appreciate turning back to the five furlong near the place by Del Mar. If there was a legitimate excuse for the last race, maybe he's a price horse you want to consider.
David Aragona, everybody, horse to watch, of course, on Twitter. And David, lay out the schedule and the work that you and the team for next week, what they can expect online, and of course the Access Center for the not just the pre-entry PPs, but and time form PPs as well. But there's the advance issue, which has got all kinds of terrific information. Brad Free always does his Del Mar primer, etc.
Yeah, head over to drf.com. There's plenty to see there. I mean, in terms of the latest news articles about all of these divisions, we've got, we're going to have clocker reports from Mike Welsh.
He's
video on the YouTube channel every day. I think there'll be a written clocker report for both days of the Breeders' Cup as well. There are past performance packages. Brad and I will be writing betting strategies for both days of the Breeders' Cup, Friday and Saturday, for all of the races with our picks and an in-depth analysis of all of those races once we put all the pieces together. And I mentioned the DRF YouTube channel. There is plenty of content that will be coming out there next week. I'll personally be doing a two-day pick six preview with Gino Bukola. That will come out later in the week, but I know Dan Illman, Mike Beer, I'm sure others will have plenty of content coming out on the YouTube channel next week, so definitely stay dialed in there.
David, outstanding. I appreciate it, and good luck this week, and maybe we'll talk next week.
Yep, sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
David Aragon, everybody, just terrific. And there's the look at the lines and the pecking order in his mind of the juvenile races. And we spent part of the morning at the beginning of the morning with his counterpart Brad Free, and we only did the distaff and the classic with Brad because of the proverbial breaking news with Idiomatic forced to retire. Hammer is standing by, and he'll be with us. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or just Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it's funny because I've been on the line for about 11 minutes now, and I've had to be quiet, which is very tough for me to do, as you know. I will be down. I'm right now scheduled to come down Tuesday morning or afternoon, which would mean I'd be there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in the mornings, unless I think I have some pet duty here. I can take care of little Coco here on Tuesday, so I can't leave earlier. So I'll be down, like I said, Tuesday afternoon, and then we'll be together in the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in the morning. So I'll be looking forward to that on a little perch above the paddock.
Absolutely. Speaking of perched, we're perched above the pre-entry PPs and starting to form some, at least ideas about next week, but before any of that, Rick, plenty of confirmation, not confirmation, consternation, and some raised eyebrows about some of the decisions in terms of the way the field's shaped up. You're always invaluable explaining the process. Feels like there may be some fallout to this week's decisions.
Well, of course, there's always opinions on, this horse should have got in and my horse should have got in or some, going on. But there was a strange occurrence that happened here, and I've been involved in the selection committee a number of years, and of course, I'm still on the graded stakes committee as we speak, and not in the room as in Hannon, but has ever seen Hamilton, and that one. Being in the room is a big deal, and so you're not there, so you don't really know what happens, and they're all good people. But it's very, very odd. I've never seen a grade one winner be placed on the also eligible list, which happened in the turf sprint with Howard Wolowitz, and eventually he's getting in, so that's kind of eases it a little bit. But, like I said, I've just never seen that before in lieu of some other horses that, didn't win the grade one. Grade ones used to be, thought of as a golden ticket, a backstage pass, so to speak, that, you were in. When you win your division, you're in. So anyway, I think there'll be a little discussion afterwards about that. But we're glad that Harold Wolowitz drew in. I'm glad you sent that information yesterday. We were talking about that. I felt so bad for the owners heading in, and just I kind of got to know the crew a little bit, and really enjoyed that, and enjoyed his win at Kentucky Downs, anyway, he's in. So let's focus on the positive on that, and I'll get a few. There'll be some discussions, as you said, what went on there and all that, but like I said, everybody in the room there is they're friends of mine. I respect them all, and so I'm sure there's figures came into the equation a little bit, I'm sure, but all's well that ends well in this case. But I did find it interesting that sportscasting.com, that's where we're going to find our Breeders' Cup information. But I knew tuning into you that you would have it. And you did, and we appreciate everybody out there appreciates now, getting their list and knowing that who's going to get in and who's not coming for sure. And you mentioned the unfortunate news idiomatic, and we hope, it's knock on wood here, that, you know, there's not too many more like that have to pull out. But we had already had the big one from at least California perspective before we even started, with the Chosen Vron being put on a list and not even able to pre-enter. So let's hope that the fields stay intact as they are. It started on Monday, where the PPs, or actually Wednesday, when we knew the fields and everybody kind of started getting their PPs and doing their own little organization, however they get them in line. And I know, you know, everybody does things different and start dipping in here. And it's, you know, if you're into this game even a little bit, this is great. This is what you look forward to. No matter what you're doing, you know, in the work-wise or around the house, you're still thinking about that fifth race and sixth race, or what race you're going to handicap next. So it's a great time, of year to be a horse racing fan.
No, no doubt. And it'll move quickly from here. I reminded people, Rick, that the draw is actually fairly late on Monday, 4 o'clock on Monday.
Yeah.
California time.
So, yeah, so that means 7 o'clock there. I mean, we used to rush to get it out, you know, try to get it done earlier in the day, and so we could, you know, get the overnight out and everything else and the information out. But I guess we'll be looking at Tuesday now, right, before everything kind of...
Well, I think PP's, you know, between 10 and midnight, 10 and 1, Brisnet's always first. And then DRF will follow probably, you know, 90 minutes to an hour, you know, 2 hours later. So they'll be up for printing by, you know, fairly late on Monday night.
Yeah, but I think like a lot of us will do, you know, a bevy of the work now before, you know, drawing, and then make some adjustments for post position and some late last minute changes. At least I hope that, you know, start tackling a few races a day and be ready. And, you know, I'm not myself, post makes a little bit, but I'm not going to go crazy if I really like a horse and he gets the 10 instead of the 4. But, you know, that's all that we probably are going to get ready. And then we'll start going for real. But, I know I'm, you know, just kind of chipping away at it, trying to watch a few races on tape, and I tell you what, I just so highly recommend that. A lot of them are on YouTube, and you get them, and you learn a lot about watching you know, some of these races. I wasn't a big film watcher until 5, 6, 7 years ago, but boy, I'm really for it. You know, it's I don't know, is it a record number of Europeans? But a lot of Europeans, record Japanese number coming, and they just add so much spice to the races. A lot of horses from California. I was just reading the Santa Anita notes, 44 horses from Southern California entered, which is a lot. And I think we got some, you know, got some chances here. I mean, the Tim Yakin's a miler has really stood out to be a really, really nice, has kept his form throughout the year. And Straight No Chaser, Dan Blacker's sprinter, who's, you know, run occasionally, but he looks like he's on his game, and, you know, it's a home game for him. And oddly enough, Bob Baffert is loaded with numbers in the filly race or the juvenile races, but probably not going to go favored, which is odd in itself. So, you know, keep an eye on which one of these you think are sitting on a big one. It's as they all are, I'm just so looking forward to it.
Jimmy coming out?
Jimmy is not coming out. He was in, he was out, he was out, he was in. And as you know, Tommy's coming out. Tommy will be here. Tommy and Jackie are coming. Rocky Top will be here. But as you know, a big, huge Yankee fan, and so he was planning, okay, well, let's see, if the Mets win, it's game 6 is here, if the Dodgers win, you know, so he's He's Yankee bound and will end up going to the games there. And then was, you know, Tommy's going, okay, well, can I get the trade from San Diego and go to a Dodger game on Friday? Boom. So they're heavy invested in the Yankees. So rather than try and, you know, do both, he said, nope, I'm staying home and I'm going to do the Yankee thing. So he'll be, believe me, handle will be up in the Upper East Side. that I can tell you, and you will be having our, I'm sure, our hours long phone handicapping version, and you know, a couple nights before the Breeders' Cup. So I don't know. It's just such a great time. You kind of put your troubles and things away, and just this is our time of year to you know, enjoy it and go full blast. I noticed. You know, we talked about last week about the race order and you know, having to declare that a month out maybe was not a great idea. And I was glad to see that they adjusted the race order after the pre-entries came out. And the mile, the dirt mile that was originally slated as the first Breeders' Cup race of the afternoon on Saturday has now been moved to the last race of the day on Saturday because it came up so one of the better races, obviously, and moved the sprint, I believe, back from the 12th spot to the 10, and then it's going to open the day with the Philly and Mare sprint. So just a couple of adjustments, but, you know, this is a day for the betters, and you know, the card should be set in that manner, and I'm glad they decided to, you know, do the right thing and put the race in a little bit better order, so... I was glad to see that. And, you know, Del Mar's, I think Keeneland gets falls into the same, no, they'd be later. But Del Mar opens the meet with the Breeders' Cup, where, you know, if it's at Santa Anita, which it has been, you know, numerous times, you know, you get to, you kind of, you know, get a feel of the way the races have been run, and you get a feel of the track itself, and then at the end of the meet, oh, we got the Breeders' Cup. Well, Del Mar, it's like, hey, welcome to Del Mar. Boom, right into it. So I don't think they're racing Wednesday, right? They're racing on Thursday, right? Or don't they open on Thursday?
I haven't looked, to be honest. Probably.
I'm just in my head. I think they're racing on Thursday, which is Halloween. And then, poof, right, so you really don't get any kind of a feel of just the way the track's been playing. And, you know, sometimes at the beginning of the meet, it's different than it would be mid-meet and all that stuff. So Del Mar has a quirkiness all to its own, even when it's run during the summer. And, you know, some horses take to it and some don't. And so everybody's going to be equal here. Poof, it's going to be their first run. You know, on the track that the track is open, opened earlier in the week. So there are horses there and they're galloping over it. And I doubt we'll see much more than that. So that's kind of always a neat way to go about it. So no one knows who some of these horses that are going to be on that track for the first time, will react, which is one of the reasons they do like that. I think that sprinter I mentioned has been on there twice. I think he's 2-for-2 at Del Mar. Straight no chaser, but you know, keep that in mind. That it is a big horse for course. So we'll talk more about that when we're on site next week. And always a pleasure. You're going out tomorrow, so fly safe tomorrow. And if anything changes, I get out there a day earlier, I'll let you know. But otherwise, I will see you Tuesday afternoon. PPs in hand, and we'll be ready to tackle it best we can.
All right, don't forget to throw my printer in the car.
Now you tell me. Well, that printer is 50 miles away, but I'll find a way.
If you're not going, you know what? If you're not going to the track, don't worry about it.
Well, you know what I can do is I can just bring my printer from home here. If you need a printer, no problem.
Well, right. We'll see. All right, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. You know, I got the one in your office that's sitting there.
Yeah. I actually thought about bringing that myself, and then I didn't. But I may be going over to Santa Anita this weekend. If I do, I'll grab it. But anyway, carry on, and we'll see you next week.
Rick Hammerly, everybody. Away they go. And we'll have Hammer with us most of next week. The opportunity to get a visit in with Tim Schramm. And this is you know, a conversation we have every year, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Always a pleasure.
Tim, I do not remember such a banner waving advertising campaign for the BCBC, but everywhere I look, inviting participation. Let's give everybody the details, what they need to know.
Great, yeah, I'm glad our marketing department's doing a great job with that. You know, basically, I'll give you the simplicity of it, and then we'll go into detail as we go. But this is basically a $10,000 contest, live money contest. When you enter, it's $10,000. $7,500 goes in a bankroll, which you wager throughout the weekend, and then $2,500 of that $10,000 goes into the prize pool. So each player contributes $2,500 to a prize pool. We gather all that money and distribute 100% of it. So there's no keep on, you know, from the house, so to speak. So basically, players are allowed to bet win, play, show, exacta, tries, and rolling daily doubles. And basically, the only rules we kind of have are, you know, on Friday, there's five championship races. You have to bet three of those at least $600 a race. And then on Saturday, there's nine Breeders' Cup championship races, and we the minimums require you to bet seven of those nine at $600 or more. So, you know, we have players come in and they like something in the undercard in first or second, third race, something like that, and they bet $2,000 on a horse to win or something like that early on. And they, as long as they hit their minimums by the end of that day, end of the day Friday or end of the day Saturday, they're still eligible for the prize pool. So, and not just players, and, you know, a lot of players say, where can I play from? The reason we got so much information out there, because we're dealing with, you know, a lot of the major ADWs. And they're putting banners and so forth on their sites. So, you know, players from all across the country in Canada not only come to Del Mar, but they're able to play from home or from some local tracks. So in other words, we have nine total places from where a player can play from in the BCBC. So it's Del Mar, obviously, on site here at the championships, and that's the best experience. And then we also have some brick and mortars like Gulfstream Park, Monmouth Park, and Santa Anita Park. They'll all have players playing in the BCBC from the racetrack. And then, obviously, the ADW side, we have, you know, the Breeders' Cup partner, TVG, Naira Betts, Express Bet, Twin Spires, and then HBI in Canada. So that's the nine locations for where players can play in the BCBC. So there's really no excuse for not getting in.
Well, and that's been, you know, that actually has been an innovation and, you know, that expansion over mm-hmm. the last, gosh, what is it, about 5 years, you know, the satellite racetracks came in and then, you know, wider and wider application
right.
on the platforms. And, it you know, it's really become, given the way the NHC is structured, mm-hmm.
Right.
The BCBC, I mean, these are the, you know, these are the two parallels in the contest world. And for live money, I mean, the BCBC has done so much to raise the profile of live money play.
Right. They have. We really have. It's been fun for me over the past. This will be the 16th year of the BCBC. And, you know, time flies, as we know. So, you know, like you said, we started doing brick-and-mortar, you know, satellite locations probably back in, actually, I think it was 16 we started doing it. And then we went to ADWs a few years after that. But it's all about, really, about the way I look at it is enhancing the experience of the player and their guests at the Breeders' Cup. We permit or allow a player to bring a guest to them with them at the event. So if they get in, if you get a BCBC entry, you and your guests will be able to come to the track. And we not only do that, we, you know, we give them, obviously, food and beverage, access to food and beverage, open bar all weekend. We'll start with, basically, meeting them at the airport if they want. We give airport transfers to and from the hotel. We have a hotel block of rooms that players can take advantage of. We get a little discount, Thursday, Friday, Saturday discount for the players. Then we actually have a hospitality Thursday, prior to BC weekend, the opening day of Del Mar, we have players come in Thursday, and they can check in early with us. And again, food and beverage and bar all day, them and their guests. And then Thursday evening, we have a little get-together at the Monarch Ocean Pub. So a lot of players take advantage of that if they're not, you know, they're not too tired from traveling out. So, you know, we appreciate people coming into town and coming to the track. So we you know, like you said, give these little perks to show our appreciation. You know, then Friday and Saturday, we shuttle them from the hotels. We got, they didn't want to rent a car or something like that. We have a shuttle that comes Friday and Saturday, picks them up at the hotel, and then it's time to get down to business. Then they have to handicap. Then they got to start picking winners.
Tim Schramm with us from Breeders' Cup and talking about BC. What do we anticipate the prize pool to be this year?
Well, I know I just went over 400 people, so that's a million right there. I know we advertised 1.25 million, and actually last year we were, you know, closer to 1.5 million. So again, you just multiply the number of players. We had 571 players last year. Multiply that by 2,500. So we're approaching 1.5 million. So the numbers look to be the, you know, pretty much the same. But, you know, we spoil the players now. They don't have to sign up weeks in advance and that type of thing. They just wait, you know, with all these ADWs, they can just make a call to their rep, and they're in the contest within hours. So it makes it kind of difficult for us because, we got 9 different locations as a staff trying to get all these players' names and accounts set up. But we've been spoiled in the last so many years, and we continue to do it. You know, every year we say, oh, my God, we can't do that much anymore, but then we do it.
So. Well, and you know, you hinted at inviting people to play on site, and
right.
particularly with the addition of Del Mar and Keeneland,
right.
this topic was at least for the first couple of years, it was kind of a an insider's real inside baseball, because there was limited hospitality available as opposed to places like Santa Anita and Churchill. So coming in as a BC participant basically got you a very comfortable setting. And I think that's something that, the big contest players, now have really, particularly made it part of their routine. You know, they said, oh, I'll play from home. And then they realized, especially Keeneland, that was, that was, I think, the breakthrough venue for that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We have a great setup at Keeneland. We have a whole floor, basically, internal, and the people handicap and sit with their guests, and then they just go outside on the walkway on Keeneland. During the Breeders' Cup, we restrict the crowd vertically. So people on the second floor, they all have seats somewhere. Third floor, they have seats there. So we can go out on the walkway and just stand there right at the finish line and watch the races and then go back in and handicap after the race. So it's a great setup at Keeneland. And obviously Jim Goodman does a great job with us working at Keeneland. So. But we expect a great field. I know I've talked to many former champs. Again, we're not only going to be close to our 571 number, a record last year, hope to go much further than that, maybe hit the 600 mark this year. But, we have last year's winner, Sean Borman. He was from Lexington, Kentucky. He's from Lexington, Kentucky, and he'll be playing this year. We have a lot of other former champs. I think we go to probably about 12 of the 16. I know Drew Cotney will be here. He won in 22. Matt Miller won in 21. He'll be here. Marshall Graham won in 20 when we had the COVID situation at Keeneland. He won that year. He'll be here, or at least he's in the contest. He might be playing remotely. Brad Anderson's coming. He's 2019 champ. I know Chuck Grubbs, also from Lexington, 2018 champ. He'll be here. Nissan Gabe, he lives out in California here.
Sure.
He'll be here. He's a 2017 champ. Robert Trainer, 2014 champ. He'll be here as well. He lives in California here. And then the only two-time champion, Patrick McGoey, spoke to him and his brother, Frank. He will not be here, but they'll be playing remotely from Louisiana.
They're playing right now. They're playing stuff from Australasia right this minute. they're betting.
Yeah, when are they not playing, right?
They're betting on raindrops coming down the windshield. Believe me. Don't worry about
it.
Of course, so, McGoey's there.
Yeah, the champions come back. They love it. Frank and Patrick were here last year, and they had a great time. And Frank did a nice showing. I think he finished in the top 15. So they're great guys. They like to have fun, and they enjoy the event. And they were, you know, so. But wow. I appreciate all these players coming in. I appreciate them every year, and I know they appreciate our staff. They tell us all the time. So. But it is taking it to another level. That's what it's about. And the BCBC with the live money contest, you know, has taken a lot of contests to another level. They're, you know, they put the pressure on other racetracks. If they're going to give a contest, they got to give some perks and show the appreciation to the players. And I know, again, the players have appreciated it. So.
Well, Tim, they've done a great job. It's grown. It continues to grow. And the mm-hmm. one thing we always say every year with this, if you're going to bet, if you know that you're betting, I would say starting at about 2,500 and up,
right?
You should be in this. It's just a value-added opportunity, and if you've got friends, and you know maybe you're not going to reach in your pocket for the 10,000, but three of you, $3,300 each, or four, $2,500. Etc. And you each put in plays, and you make yourself eligible. Don't think that part of it through. And BreedersCup.com/BCBC to sign up and for all the details.
That's right. You got it. So I appreciate the plug on that. And I do believe it's a great tournament. It's many players tell me it's the best one of the year, but the live money contest for sure. NAC, like you said, the two best ones of the year, probably NAC and BCBC. And I know the NTRA very well, and they do a super job at the NAC. And I know I see you out there every year, but it's a great setup there in Vegas. We don't have the luxury of putting everybody in one place, all our 300-plus that are on the track, especially at places like Keeneland or Del Mar. I guess Keeneland we kind of do, but Del Mar, they're really small rooms and so forth, so that makes it kind of a challenge for us, but it works out great. I mean, we like I said, we give them these perks, and they enjoy it, and they have a great time, and you can't beat the weather out here. I've been out here since last Saturday, and, little chilly in the morning, and then by 10, 11 o'clock, it's fine, and it's been sunny. It's always sunny out here. It's amazing.
Wow, it should be a terrific cup, and the BCBC just enhances, and we'll get a couple more plugs in between now and Friday. Tim Schramm, I appreciate it.
Okay, Steve.
We'll see you as early breakfast at the Breeders' Cup. We'll see you as early as Sunday or Monday.
Okay, sounds great.
I appreciate it. Tim Schramm, everybody, who's done a great job with the BCBC, continues to grow every year. We got about 6-7 minutes to close out the morning, and we'll go over to the Oklahoma. And gorgeous day again here in the Saratoga County/Washington County, where I am. Dave Norton, the clocker, formerly known as Payson Dave, joins us for a quick hit. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everybody.
Dave, I mentioned that you were going to be on, and before we do anything else, because it's the first time we've had a chance, you as close to Chuck as anybody, and give you an opportunity to pay tribute to Chuck.
First of all, condolences to all who knew him. He was an asset to the game, a truly great guy to know. I don't think you can find anybody that had a bad word to say about Chuck Simon. Going back to when we had some horses together, Steve.
Yep.
Got to know him then. He had such knowledge of the game. Had a very down to earth and straightforward way of expressing his thoughts and opinions. Cannot say enough about him, and very, very sorry to see that see his passing.
Well, and of course, your days at Payson, and then later at Palm Beach Downs, and Chuck was at Palm Beach Downs several years, and I knew when you were going to join us, I had to get that in. Dave, give everybody a top line, the horses that the principal stars that have been at Saratoga that you've been watching since the meet ended, and what we can anticipate from them. And, of course, that all starts with now with Torpedo Anna, who's going to be about, I don't know, 3 to 5 in the distaff.
And we've got a number of Breeders' Cup horses that have been training here this fall at Saratoga. I've got a list of them here. Arthur's Ride, Fierceness, Skippy Longstocking, Far Bridge for Christophe Clement, Grand Sonata, Batacata, Torpedo Anna, Warlike Goddess, Scylla, Menti, Cynthian, Governor Sam, Noble Confessor, and Snow White. Those are the ones that I recall off the top of my head. And just as a note, we had four of them work just this morning. Fierceness, Skippy, Longstocking, Far Bridge, and Batacuda. They put in their final works in preparation for next weekend. Everybody looks good and looking forward to a big weekend of racing.
Dave, talk about Fierceness a little bit more, and you know, given you know that you had a chance to see him pretty much all summer, how has he changed at all, and has he come forward since Travers? He's probably the most important horse at this point after Idiomatic's retirement. You know, Torpedo Anna, I want to ask about, but start with Fierceness.
Well, I'm going back to actually this past winter. I was at Palm Beach Downs all winter with Fierceness, and you know, saw him in the wintertime. Certainly have seen him all summer here at Saratoga. And from an observation standpoint, let me just talk a little bit about today's work. It was a half mile and 48 and 4 in company with a horse called Illuminaire, a nice horse that the Centennial Farms has. It was a easy work for Fierceness. Looked good. I don't think Todd wanted anything dramatic out of him. Did a nice easy half in 48 and 4, which on, as you know, Oklahoma, it tends to be a little slower. So a 48 and 4 is actually a pretty good time. The gallop out was solid. It wasn't a spectacular move, but I don't think it was intended to be. It was a relatively easy, conservative half mile, but looked good doing it.
Has he? Has he come forward? Is he, you know, is basically the same horse that he was going into Travers, or has he, you know, benefited from the 2 months?
I believe he's benefited. My concern with Fierceness during the earlier months, during the late spring and even going into the summer, my concern with Fierceness was he always showed a tremendous amount of talent, but had, I think Todd was having difficulty keeping the weight on him. And his races took a bit out of him. He took some time to recover. I think early on, his races were in and out. He'd have a good race, he'd have a bad race. He'd have a good race, he'd have a bad race. My observations now, I think, you know, first of all, the time, you know, since the Travers has done him very good. He looks healthy. I think he's put on some weight. He appears to be a little bigger, a little stronger, a little bit more solid horse, and should give a great account of himself going into next weekend.
Well, we're going to run short on time, Dave, so I may have to come back to you next week with Gary Young and with Mike Welch when we do our, and Kentucky too, we'll do our compendium of conversations. But I appreciate the opportunity to check in, and we'll get, there's some important horses on that list that I want to talk to you about.
No problem. Just let me know, and we'll set it up.
Dave Norton, everybody, and... of course, Dave, part of the Clocker team, at part of the Daily Racing Forum, but he's Naira's Clocker at Saratoga, and he'll be back at Palm Beach Downs this winter, and works with Mike and Mike Vesey and Welsh and Dave Grenning. Grenning contributes too. We didn't get to KK today, but Churchill starts Sunday. We'll catch up next week. But thanks to Dave and Tim Schramm and Hammer, Scully, David Aragona, Nick Tamaro, and Brad Free. Lots of work to do this weekend, everybody. TwinSpires weekend preview. Live from Del Mar starting Monday. Wait for some changes at Santa Anita, and we'll post the try. Looks like a $128 punch, I think, for this carryover at Santa Anita. Thanks, everybody. Good luck this weekend. Talk to you from Del Mar, Breeders' Cup 24 on Monday.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah.